Hi, listeners. Thanks for joining. This is Gabe Lajeunesse with the Stronger Together podcast, where we highlight the best of our next generation leaders in community building, placemaking, economic development, and business transitions. These young leaders are facing significant challenges from climate change to soaring housing costs, the dynamics of hybrid work, to name a few. Smart growth and near urbanism, representing walkable city centers, environmental stewardship, income diversity, zoning reform, biking, mass transit. These ideas are being adopted, legislated, and advocated with increasing influence across the United States. Here, we'll interview the changemakers behind that momentum. Thanks for joining.
I'm a financial advisor with UBS Financial Services based out of Burlington, Vermont, and can be reached at gabriel.lajeunesse@ubs.com. The guests on this program are not affiliated with UBS Financial Services Incorporated, and their views are their own.
Well, welcome, listeners. Gabe Lajeunesse, really grateful today to have some special guests, really inspirational guests, Liz and Plus Jones. It's a little bit of a different development story when we look at what they're doing in some of our inner city opportunity zones. Their outfit is Equality Equation. They're working on health and wellness, building hospitals, workforce development, building trade centers and sports and recreation. So commercial projects, very high level, but in some really, really needed areas. So welcome, guys, to the program today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, so I'd love to just hear a little bit of background. How did you guys get into development? How did you start?
For me personally, having been in the construction business for essentially all my life and seeing the opportunities for the business that we did, which was mainly demolition site work and concrete work, and seeing that those opportunities were starting to get paired in real estate development projects and removed from the public sector, what I saw years ago was that pretty soon, the MBE and WBE participation that is required on state projects are going to go out the door. And people are going to be able to create companies, create construction firms, the demolition firms, in order to perform this work that has been publicly procured for 100 years. So that, looking at that as a long term, as I was a project manager with my family business, I started to push our family towards, look, we need to look at developing our own projects, creating projects for ourselves that would allow us to benefit from having a construction firm and a demolition and site work firm on hand that, you know, we could really compete in that market if we were able to tap into the development world. So for me, it started from there, understanding that publicly procured projects that we did were starting to be swept into real estate development projects. And as you know, development projects or developers have favorites, and you take away the public aspect or the aspect of participation by companies, and you get back to what these kind of anti-discrimination laws and spaces surrounding procurement, you get away from that when you do that. And that was a way that we saw that developers were not on purpose removing fair public procurement out of the marketplace into private development. So that's what my motivation was.
A lot of people I talked to came from that space, right? And different reasons necessarily for why they might jump in, right? But they come from a construction background. I think, you know, you're wanting to be able to develop in your own community and hire in your own community. That's pretty powerful. I want to take a minute just to have Liz tell a little bit about what she adds, because you guys are offering services that other people couldn't. Your sweetheart and partner in crime has a really unique background. So Liz, you want to just talk about how you fit into this development space, how it works?
Sure. So I was going to say, when you said, like, how did you get into development? Mine is one of marriage, right? So this triangulation of my husband's work, really, I say that playfully because in a bigger sense, I've been really blessed that my life's call and my life's work that kind of saw how to integrate what my work is as an adult educator and as a career educator into the communities that we wanted to serve, and how what I've been doing for the last 20 years fits so well. And so my background is correctional education. So started off as a systems engineer, started in a maximum security juvenile correctional facility as a teacher after becoming a career switcher, then went into the federal space as a teacher and became the equivalent of what is a principal, and then went to central office for the Federal Bureau of Prisons, where I oversaw the GED program and wrote the agency's first standardized curricula, oversaw programming for like 200 institutions across the country, including Puerto Rico. And so what better way than to bring kind of what we know work for changing and transforming lives through education than to bring it to the community and to also have it be place-based, right, in the hardest hit areas, just fit completely with the model that we've been blessed to kind of work on. So that is at the heart of the development that we do, is to bring quality workforce development training to get people into careers, to get them into home ownership in those same communities, to get them great health and wellness in those communities, and to teach them even how to use their leisure times through sport and recreation.
I have to tell you, it really, like, if you step back and look at it, it's just a match made in heaven. You guys are a power team. It's amazing to me. So when you look at the kinds of, like, in Baltimore, the project that they're spinning on right now is a technology center where people are going to learn to be heavy equipment operators. And these are people that might be in public housing or other things and don't have the opportunity. But that background that Liz has, you know, coupled with Plus's construction experience, has just driven them to this place where they're making massive impact. So anyway, really excited to know you guys and see things as they kind of roll out. What I'd love to talk about, you know, people look at the finished product, right? And they, you know, you build a new hospital. I know you're focused on historically Black colleges, right? I mean, you've got these beautiful dreams and projects that you're working on. When you look at a finished product, you don't know the story of what it took to get there. So I don't know if you want to pick one or two. Could you just tell me some of the challenges that you've been through that you just had to really grit through? Tell us how you got through it. Tell us what the situation was and how you worked around it to get to where you are today.
I think each of the projects, as we, you know, pursue them and pursue the opportunity, all each are different and all each come with their own unique challenges. Baltimore is different from, say, Richmond and working with a HBCU. That is different from working in a rural community in Virginia. But they all seem to have a spirit of challenge that we think is definitely a pushback, what we deem as the enemy, to push back on what it is that we purpose to do. If you take Baltimore, for instance, and in all of our projects, what we knew going in is that we're not blue blood developers. We're not blue bloods of the city or the municipality that we're working in. So we had to come in with an understanding that, one, the deal had to be supremely principal or financeable. We had to come in with understanding that do not have any expectation that any grants, seed money, any of those things would come about. And what we learned during the process is that even with having all those boxes checked, meaning that, hey, we don't need the land from you. We acquired the land. We don't need any operational support. The development of the curricula by Elizabeth allowed us to be able to tap into federal and state grants as would a college or career and technical education school would do. And we don't need you to sponsor us with grants. Even with all of those boxes being checked, meaning that we're bringing our own money, we're bringing our own land, to have the moral support of a project with such a public benefit, you would think that would be an easy box to check by any municipality. And we always, you know, Liz and I always have this conversation about the government seems to be like, you know, you think of it as robotic. And then if you do all of the things you're supposed to do, then fair government will allow you to kind of move forward. What we have found out in each of these spaces, whether it's urban, whether it's university-based, or whether it's rural-based, is that people operate these institutions, and subjectivity is a big part of where your challenges come from. Whereas some people can come in and say, hey, write me a law for a TIF for $148 million, they can get it done. Write me a check for a project for $16 million so I can pay the interest on a loan that I'm going to take and then lease the place to you for 34 years. All of those things seem to be harder paths than what we presented before any institution. We bring our own money. We bring our own lenders. We develop our own plans. We essentially just look for moral support. even with it lining up that way, we have found that our biggest challenges or our biggest challenge are the people and the spirit that they bring towards the project, and whether it's dealing with people that are, you know, lack of a better term, non-blue bloods. That's our challenge. So it's more of a spiritual challenge, because otherwise God has provided all of the resources that we need to present, whether it's to purchase the land, whether it's to start the curriculum, get our certifications in certain areas.
Let's maybe dial in on Baltimore, just because I think people can imagine that it's, you know, it's a very political city. And so, like, most of us have been through various zoning and planning commissions, and we know how political that can be, and we know how the neighbors and other businesses in the area can try to weigh in on different things. What are some of the obstacles you guys found? You thought it was going to be easy. You have the land, you got this stuff lined up, you got a curriculum that's going to be funded. What are some of the things you had to do to win over the city? Because I know at this point, they love your project, right? But what did you have to do to get there?
The honest answer is that we don't have everyone on board, right? So I think that we have pockets and places where we can move things. And then we still have pockets and places where we meet resistance, right? So, and honestly, some of the resistance and some of the pockets and the opposition that we encounter, though it feels very personalized, I think it's honestly more a reflection of where government is overall, right? And by that, I mean, so there's kind of the political will surrounding your project and kind of right people behind your project. And we've had great support from the state level and having senators to kind of give us bond initiative funding and that kind of thing to show that kind of material support. But the other side of this is that you also have sometimes competing interests within the municipality itself, as well as sometimes, and I'm going to use this term, and I hope nobody takes it too harshly, but it's the only term that I can give you, right, Gabe? It's a broken government, right?
Okay.
And so post-COVID, you have a lot of turnover of your most experienced people who have the knowledge and experience base. And so as you have this kind of turnover post-COVID, as well as the nature of politics, Baltimore has term limits. So you have a lot of turnover of in the political space, as well as the people supporting the people who have been elected to office. A lot of times it is shifting sands, right? And so sometimes it definitely has that feeling of we take three steps forward to take two steps back. So the same people who are really interested in the project and gung-ho and moving forward in one season, fast forward to another season, somebody new in the administration is coming in, and now there are some competing interests. And so then you see that affect the progress of your project very different.
Yeah, you know, and I think for these long-term projects in a big municipality, you're going to see that kind of thing. But tell me, how have you guys been able to keep going, right? Because I'm sure that there are times where you just wonder, is it worth it, right? Because right now, I mean, you know, at some point, this will be a valuable project for your business. But at the moment, some of what you're doing, you're just really, it's a lot of risk. You're putting your labor out there basically for free, hoping that this thing's going to come through. So how have you guys been able to keep moral fortitude to keep pressing on?
So honestly, I will tell you, this is a great deal of faith, trust, prayer, and hope, right?
Yeah.
That is what's happening internally, right? That is the kind of the bigger narrative. I think when we come down to this kind of operational, tangible space, I think what we do, and I really give the credit to Bless in this regard, is that we keep turning the puzzle piece, right? And so unlike a normal puzzle where it fits in one place, no, in this puzzle, it can move around. Okay, well, today it might be an edge piece. Tomorrow it might be another piece. And by that, I mean, so if the city is on board in one season, but now the players have changed, their internal pieces have changed, now we have to pivot. And now we have really leveraged relationships with the state and various state agencies, because we've also found not only traditional lenders as far as old school brick and mortar banks,
yeah,
where we're trying to do pre-development funding and construction funding and all that kind of great stuff. But then we've also shifted over to some privatized pieces that do P3 agreements, where you're still working in tandem with the municipality, but now the agreements look different. Now what it means to work together and to get the funding looks different. And in that space, those lenders are also looking for something very different, right? And so I think it's like saying we have to become all things to all people, right? It really is, because at the end of the day, the operational piece, the pro forma piece pencils out. Mm-hmm. Whether we're going through a traditional lender or whether we're going through some other kind of investment vehicle for funding, the operational piece works. And we know that we have created kind of the partnerships. I think that's one of the other things that has happened as we meet with the municipality and they say, well, you know, well, what about this much of for you to be able to take care of this debt on a month to month? It's coming from your operations, but that doesn't make us feel secure enough. We need you to kind of mix up this bag. We need more lease space, or we need different operators. And so what we have done is continually to respond to that, to go out and to create different partnerships with different agencies, nonprofits, other private entities, to really kind of create what's needed. And the beauty has been is that what we have done to make the performer work really has been able to speak to all of these different various vehicles for financing the project.
I think it's great. Your story about pressing through with a lot of faith and prayer, and you know, like you've got a vision and you know it penciled, but you've been doing this, you know, like you just think of the interest rate environment and what's changed, you know, what kind of projects people feel comfortable with, traditional lenders versus non-traditional private equity. I mean, there's just so many people in this space trying to figure things out, and you've had to navigate. And so it sounds like you've been very flexible. And I always believe at the end of the day, you know, as you have these greater coalitions, right, you've got more people on board, it sounds like, that are using this project for other nonprofits and other entities. It just makes a stronger case, right? It makes everybody win, you know, and hopefully down the road, it's easier the next time. But as you say, the players change and they're different, right? And you can't necessarily count on these relationships propelling you to the next place. But it's a beautiful story. So I'm excited to see things go up. And thank you for your tenacity and pushing through all that. The final thing that I ask the folks on the program, we have an affordability crisis in America, right? I mean, you just look at, and in some cases, you can look at workforce. And Liz, I know this is your space, so you know all about the fact that the people you're training probably for many years were sort of underpaid, right? And so there's been some wage growth and appreciation in wages. And of course, that all needs to get passed on. And it's getting passed on in an environment where now interest rates are higher than they were before. And so it's creating some pressure. I'm wondering, I think you guys have a very unique, I don't know if you want to chat at all about, you know, some of the tax credit components to this, but it sounds like you guys, again, it's penciling really well. How are you making these things affordable? You're able to make these things pencil. You know, I think if somebody were looking at the neighborhood in Richmond, they probably wouldn't have thought that they were going to build a hospital in that neighborhood, right? That's why there's no hospital there, because when they look at what they're going to get from Medicaid or whoever the payer is going to be for healthcare, it doesn't make sense, right? But you guys are able to do these projects. How are you able to do it?
So first of all, I'll just say this. One of the ways that this has worked for us is the population that we're seeking to serve. Because we are really seeking to work with the most challenged populations in the most impoverished areas and areas that are suffering from historic disinvestment, then there are a number of vehicles that are available to us when we start talking about working on a capital stack. And so I'll be honest with you, the workforce development is my area. Financing and development, definitely not. We work with a number of financial professionals that do specialize in finding what works for where we are working. You have opportunity zone credits that you can use in this space. And then the other is, of course, I'm drawing a blank on the name. And we have a whole consultant that just does this. But I think it's like 39% of it you can, it's a credit.
It's a new, the new market tax credit? Is that the one you're thinking of?
Thank you, Gabe. Yes. New markets tax credits. So we work with a new markets tax credits consultant who's done a lot of work, especially in these markets. So between in the DC metro area, all the way up through Maryland, down through Virginia. And so he specializes in overfunding these tax credits so that we can immediately have like 40% equity put back in our project in under a 10-year period. Folks would have to kind of go out and do some digging on their own. But I think what it really speaks to is that if you are really trying to be of service in the community, if you are willing to take the risk of operating in spaces that aren't traditionally the most profitable areas, that there are a number of different things, whether they be state-based funds, because the state of Maryland has a lot of development funds that are available working in specific areas, as well as privately funded or nonprofit funded vehicles to help you to manage bringing your costs to a place where your deal can actually be financeable and pensable. And
yeah, I think, you know, it's so interesting. If nobody's ever looked at the capital stack on these kinds of projects, it'll be the craziest thing you've ever seen. You've got 10 different grant sources, right? And you've got these tax credits, and you've got, and frankly, I think for anybody who's interested in this, and I don't know if you guys are open to, if people want to look you up and talk to you about your process. I mean, I think the reality is everybody really needs a consultant, because the agencies awarding are used to looking at these packets in a particular way, right? You were the expert at workforce development, so you knew how to get the contracts and write those things. You need somebody else who knows how to do this new market tax credit or whatever it is, because the agencies want it to look like everything else. They want people they're familiar with. So what's the best way to get a hold of you if people are trying to get a hold of you? Just your website, or what's the best way?
Absolutely. You can go through the website, but we're always open to people shooting us an email, plus.jones@theequalityequation.com or elizabeth.jones@theequalityequation.com. We're not blue blood developers, right? This isn't something that we've come up in. And so we have had to really surround ourselves with professionals that their expertise is financing and it is development, because a lot of times you don't know what you don't know. You know that you have a vision and you might even have site control and ownership of the land, and you might even have great operations. There's still a long walk to get to the place of putting the capital stack together and understanding all of your funding sources and uses and sources and so many different things that just become an education in itself. And that's completely separate from the political space and working with the municipality. It is just the work of development before you ever touch a piece of dirt.
Thanks for being guests. I'm so excited to see ground getting broken. We think maybe sometime in 2025, we're going to see this tech center in Baltimore, down in Richmond, the hospital, maybe a little bit longer, but it's in progress. And really being able to get these important community development resources to the people that need them most and be able to transform these communities. Just, it's amazing what you're doing. I'm so grateful for you. Thanks for being my guest today.
Thank you for having us.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.